Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the most listened to internet radio show in the nonprofit sector, dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern-day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders, also a successful author. His books range from successful online fundraising to the use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. Guests on The Nonprofit Coach are leaders in their field who share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. This is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Click on Radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of The Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
It is great to be back here. This is the live edition of The Nonprofit Coach. We are back from our summer hiatus. Today is September 10th, 2013. As you heard from our new announcement here, that this is a live call-in show, so you can call in at 347-324-3080. You also can join us over in the chat room, and you can also email me at tedhart@tedhart.com. For those of you who know the show, it's great to have you back. And those of you who are new, thank you for joining us today. We always start off the show with Page One News. You can follow along on Page One News by going over to tedhart.com and click on radio links. You'll find all the very best links in the nonprofit sector. First up here and the nonprofit coach here on Page One News comes to us from the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Donors who give by text want to give more, and this is a new study. Donors who are giving in a new survey of more than 20,000 text message donors, 85% of those donors said that they would be willing to give $25 to $50 via text. However, mobile contributions right now are limited to a top gift of $10. So 42% in the survey said that they would that they currently give more than $250. Roughly 85% of them said that making a small gift via text message would not make them less likely to make larger gifts to other organizations. So the study was sponsored by the MGive Foundation. Those are the folks who manage online giving, those $10 donations right now. They're the charitable arm of the Denver company that provides text messaging fundraising services. And hopefully we'll be able to continue to make the case to have text and mobile giving increase beyond that $10 limit. And next up here in the Nonprofit Coach, it is my pleasure, back fresh and bright as can be from summer hiatus, is Eva Aldrich. She is here from CFRE, and this is time, Eva, for the CFRE Minute. Welcome back from summer hiatus.
Thanks so much, Ted. It's good to be back.
So what's going on over at CFRE?
Well, I think the last time I talked with you, I mentioned that we are going to have a totally revamped website and member portal, and we are putting the final touches on that and look forward to launching it in October. So we'll be contacting everyone on our list to let them know when it's up and running, and we're really looking forward to being able to provide a lot better experience to our current and future CFREs through this.
That's terrific, and of course you'll be back with us each month, as you have been for quite some time here, giving us information from CFRE. So you'll be able to give us an update on when that actually launches, and you're saying that might be in October?
Yes. Right now we're looking at the beginning of the month, but as you know, with tech upgrades, sometimes you know little things happen at the end. And we
you
also
gotta be
waiting...
flexible when you're working in text.
Exactly. And we also want to wait until our application deadline for the fourth testing window, just to make certain that people who are getting their applications in to test at the end of the year don't experience any issues. So that deadline is September 30th. So for everyone out there who's thinking, I'd like to be a CFRE by the end of this year, September 30th is your deadline to get your application to us.
So still plenty of time to work on those applications and get those in for the next round of testing. That's terrific.
Absolutely.
Now, I also wanted to just make note for all of our listeners that we do, of course, have a link to CFRE.org over in the radio links for today's show, so they can go directly there and receive all of the links to not only today's show, but all the archives for our prior shows of this year, 2011 and 2012.
Great. Thanks so much.
Well, anything else going on over at CFRE before I let you go?
You know, I think those are the big things right now. We're getting ready for fall conference season. Looking forward to being at the AFT Leadership Academy. I'll be there. Also,
tell us a little bit about that. So where will CFRE be this fall?
We are going to be, in addition to at AFP, we are going to be at the Association of Healthcare Philanthropy meeting in Toronto. We're going to be at the International Catholic Stewardship Conference in Dallas. We're also going to be at the International Fundraising Congress in Amsterdam. So
oh, that's terrific. Well, that's one of the
season.
I think one of the best conferences put on by the Resource Alliance over in Nordvikenhout. So have a great time at that conference, and anyone who's out there, connect up with CFRE on the road or online at CFRE.org. That's Eva Aldrich back here with the AFP Minute, or the CFRE Minute, and we'll catch up with you again next month.
Thanks so much, Ted.
Thank you, Eva. All right, back here on page one news, you'll find over in the radio links today six types of Facebook posts that'll help you generate leads. And so this is a very nice article that just posted, and this posted over on HubSpot. So you can go and you can read about the 2013 State of Inbound Marketing Report. And on this in this report, you'll be able to learn about direct leads, indirect leads, use call to action in cover photos is their number one suggestion. Include links and captions to photos. Host a Facebook chat, and so they give you information on how to actually do that. Make Facebook events for webinars is number four. Tip number five is to use targeted advertising to extend your content's reach. 64% of U.S. advertisers are upping their social ad budget for 2013. Are you? Certainly should be. And if you listen to the Nonprofit Coach, you know that we do believe that paid advertising is an important part of your outreach, and certainly as you build your expertise to then look at attracting a Google grant for AdWords support as well. And then number six is to build forms on tabs. And again, they're going to give you the information here right in the Generating Leads Using Facebook. You can download the ebook right now, and the link is over at tedhart.com. Click on Radio Links. Next up here on page one news is a study over in the Chronicle of Philanthropy. This is a study that states that baby boomers are now the largest source of charity gifts. Now, in this report, according to generations before 1946 as well. So in this study, boomers make up 34% of the pool of donors, but now give 43% of all money contributed by individuals. So we're now seeing that that change here as well. So in this report, they're also going to give you information on millennials, and those are folks that are born between 1981 and 1995. The Generation X folks, 1965 to 1980, boomers, and then the elderly. So you're going to get a good breakdown there and some good insights into younger donors, but certainly now that baby boomers are now taking up the largest percentage, you want to make sure that you read this report. Post it over in the Chronicle of Philanthropy, link available to you, tedhart.com. Click on Radio Links. Also in the Radio Links today, and I'm very, very pleased to have had this sent over to us. Appreciate everybody who sends us items to be considered in the links. You can send that to us at tedhart@tedhart.com and make your suggestions on things you would like to be included on Page One News. And the Executive Service Corps of Washington has posted the Best Practices Materials Manual for Nonprofit Boards. This is a 39-page manual that we now have a link available to you. That goes through all of the details of boards of directors recruitment, board policies, gives you resources, talks about the role of the board, certainly the relationship between various officers. It gives you sample position descriptions for each of the board members. This is really invaluable information, particularly for those of you who are either building new boards of directors or trying to help your current board of directors be more efficient and effective in their interaction and their governance duties for your nonprofit organization. Really, really good stuff. And this is, of course, available free of charge. That's the Best Practices Materials Manual for Nonprofits. That's available over in the radio links today at tedhart.com. And with that, I'm very pleased to say we're ready to wrap up Page One News and head right on over to our Page Two expert. Our Page Two expert is well known here at Nonprofit Coach. She is one of the top podcasts listened to. She's always a favorite here on the Nonprofit Coach, and that is, of course, Pat Pasquale. She is the director of the Washington, D.C. office of the Foundation Center. She was appointed the director of the Foundation Center's regional office in D.C. in April of 2008. This is a return engagement, as I said, who served as the D.C. director from 1994 to 1999 and led the center's Cleveland office for the 9 years prior to that. She's also experienced as public library administrator both in Cleveland and the District of Columbia Public Library Systems, where she managed special system-wide initiatives and outreach services. She's an expert in all things related to research and the materials available through the Foundation Center. Today, she's coming back to give us some crystal ball, look forward into funding from foundations, and how nonprofit organizations, as you're looking to your fall campaigns, can boost your fundraising potential and do a better job at attracting foundation support. Welcome back here to Nonprofit Coach, Pat Pasquale.
Well, thank you, Ted, for having me back, and I always love your introduction, but I think what people love to hear is about the Foundation Center and all the wonderful things that we try to do to help the nonprofit sector be more sustainable.
Well, of course, we're big fans of the Foundation Center, and that goes without saying, but we're even bigger fans of yours because your particular style of information and your ability to help people understand what can sometimes feel complicated or at the very least difficult to understand how to maneuver through the world of foundation fundraising, which can be an important source of funding, but has its own quirks and its own way of doing business. So why don't we start off with some of your tips. We said we're going to be talking about crystal balling it here. Talking about some of your tips in terms of what you think all of my listeners here should be doing this fall to prepare for bigger success.
Ah, good. Well, this is a perfect segue into some things that we've been doing at the center to make it less complicated, because I totally agree with you that it is becoming more and more complicated. And one of the things the center's been doing is looking at its resources and trying to rearrange them so that people have quicker, easier access and can get to places that they want to be. And if you're a Foundation Center watcher, you may have not noticed, and maybe you haven't, is that we redid our main website, which for years people have said, it's wonderful, but it's too dense with text, and we need some help. And so about a month ago, I guess about 2 months ago, we actually redid the website. And hopefully, when people take a look at it, it will get them to resources much quicker. It's got less text, more boxes, et cetera. And the redesign is meant to help people move along faster in terms of finding what they need to look like, what they need to look at.
So one place to start, of course, is the website. And what's the main purpose? Is that an all one stop shop, or is that just a starting point?
Well, actually, that was my next point. Is that we now have 5 websites, and most people don't realize this anymore. And I think if I walk people through the website, you'll see that there's special resources in each one of the websites that will help you in different ways. So, FoundationCenter.org is what I call the
organizational website. It has a little bit of everything, you know, who we are, the normal things about us, contact us, et cetera. But we've got some specialized websites that people are really going to, I think, really like. One that many people probably haven't looked at is something called glasspockets.org. And GlassPockets helps you as we go more and more looking at individual giving as, you know, being very, very close to foundation giving, because individuals have foundations and give, you know, through their own giving as well. But GlassPockets is a website that we set up almost 2 years ago, and it assesses foundation transparency, which is one helpful way of looking at foundations. Do they have their application guidelines on their web in they print anything? Do they assess? Do they have a way for grantees to give feedback about their programs, etc.? So what the Foundation Center has done is set up this GlassPockets website where you can look, and we are going through foundations. They have a chart of criteria that they need to meet, and if they meet all the criteria, they land up on the GlassPockets page. And one of my staff members here in D.C. does that. So it's interesting to see what foundations are doing. It has on that page a handy list of foundations and which social media they're involved in. But what really is a real hidden gem is our Eye on the Giving Pledge information. You know that, you know, there are about 114 individuals who said they've committed the majority of their assets to philanthropy. You know,
that's big news in the sector.
Right. Well, what we did was we took the names, and we actually had staff members compile background information and biographical information on them. And on the giving pledge page on GlassPockets, you can see what, you know, where they were born, when they went to school, children, et cetera, all that good background information that you can link to. And then there are some charts that show where the Giving Pledge people are geographically and what subject areas that they're in. So it's really very helpful page for people who are looking to see if they can connect to one of these billionaires, etc. And so GlassPockets is the Giving Pledge section is a real gem for people who are looking at for the big major gifts kinds of activities.
And in using those sites, do you start with the Foundation Center site, which of course we're providing a direct link in the radio links today. To your office, is that a good place to start, or should people?
Well, they actually have their they have their own addresses.
Okay.
And at the bottom of foundationcenter.org, which is the main page, which we just redid, and it's really nice. At the very bottom of the page, it links all of our. There's a box that has the addresses for all our portals, because we have about five different portals and other links that people want to get to. So the best place to find to get to these is to either go to foundationcenter.org at the bottom of the page, or, for example, with GlassPockets, it's www.glasspockets.org, and it takes you right into that page. So that's
okay, and we'll be adding to the radio links today, GlassPockets, so that folks will be able to go to. And did you say that's glasspockets.org?
Mm-hmm, glasspockets.org.
Okay.
But
terrific.
Glasspockets.org, right.
Okay.
But the really helpful place for people doing planning and fundraising in terms of the rest of the year is GrantSpace, and that's grantspace.org. And this has four major sections on it. The first section is by area, which I think people will find really helpful. It has the RFPs. Say you're looking at an arts organization. It lists the RFPs. It lists the major news articles about the arts. It has a Twitter feed of tweets from various and sundry arts funders aggregated in a little box. You don't have to go to each one. You can just look there. They have live chats. We have webinars. We have podcasts, et cetera. And we have about probably 10 general subject areas that you can look at on GrantSpace in the subject section. And then we go to the skills section, which is what people really love, is we have skills such as how to write a proposal, how to do a fundraising plan, how to incorporate, how to work with boards. And that section, again, is a multimedia sort of wonderland. You can listen to podcasts. You can watch webinars, programs that some of our offices are actually taped, so you can look there. We have live chats, and if you miss a live chat, there's transcripts, frequently asked questions, and the most popular part of the section is sample documents. So you're looking for proposals, bylaws, job descriptions. You can also find sample documents there. It's a real, as I said, wonderland for people who are trying to learn more about a particular area. And you can do all of it. What's great is it's convenient. You can look at it in your at your desk or in your chair at home at any time. That's really great for you. So Grant Space.
So it's sort of like having a bit of a consultant at your fingertips, isn't it? I'm over here on grantspace.org, and I see all the various tools. You, as you said, you've got classrooms, and so there's just a lot to do over here, which is, you know, for organizations whose budgets might be a bit tight on training, this could be a really great way for them to expand those budgets.
Right, and it's I always like to say, I shoot myself in the foot sometimes when someone calls Washington. And I said, well, you can also skip Washington traffic and parking and look at some of these things right online, especially the webinars. But I mean, it is for areas that don't have a foundation center or collection anywhere nearby. It's a real boom. And you work internationally, and we know that people internationally are now using this to learn about how to fundraise in America.
And, of course, this show, as you know, has an international audience, particularly since all of the shows are podcasts, and the listenership on the podcast, Pat, has been growing by tens of thousands. So we're very, very pleased at how rapidly the Nonprofit Coach Show is growing. So this is a great way to get information out and to help people be able to expand their knowledge base.
Right. Well, that's the other section. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead. You just have so much to share today. That's why we have you on this show, because you've got so much to share.
Well, we run to keep up here at the Foundation Center. My staff and I go, like, what's new today? And in terms of Grant Space, the other section I just want to point out is we have the frequently asked questions and sample document sections, which are really popular because people who are new to philanthropy, or even if you're in philanthropy, I had a question yesterday, what's a social impact bond? We try to keep up with all those terms that people are going scratching their head over. What is this? And you can put it in when you click on the knowledge base. You can put in terms and be led to resources, not just Foundation Center resources, but other resources that will explain what this, you know, what the terms and what the sort of issues actually are. And then according to Google Analytics, our most popular spot is sample documents. And you can put in, I want to see bylaws, job descriptions, budgets, proposals. And if we have some on the site, it'll bring it up to you so you can actually can see it. So that's really a really popular spot. And the last two sections on Grant Space are two that everybody is always talking about, collaboration and evaluation. As you well know, the hot terms in philanthropy, we have the collaboration database where you can see examples of collaborations, how people have done it. And the evaluation database has examples of how to do different types of evaluation. And these are all free. And sort of it's like Grant Space. It's like a little university where you can sort of poke around and go to all these classes.
That's a really great way to view it. It's sort of like a little university, because part of, I think, where you're leading to this is that these are not just sort of, gee, if you have some extra time or you don't know what else to do, go to Grant Space. These are actually skill sets that you have to have if you're going to be successful in foundation grant writing.
Right. And more, we can't keep up. You hear about these new ways of giving. What do you do about donor-advised funds? What are giving circles? We had a program here at D.C. on giving circles, and people were like, wow, I didn't know about giving circles, and how do you work with them, and, you know, where are they, et cetera. And so, you know, Grant Space is one of the places where you can sort of keep up, you know, put in your question, and somebody will actually get back to you. Because
I think for the general development officer, regardless of, you know, your title or your position within your organization, there is a general sense on the part of most leadership and boards of directors that you are going to be the resident expert and you do know all of these things.
Right.
And the Foundation Center can be a friend in helping you actually bridge the gap between what you know right now and what you need to know to succeed.
Right, and we actually have live chat, which many people don't know about when you go onto Grant Space.
I was just going to ask you about that. When you go to grantspace.org, right there, very easy to find, right in the upper right-hand corner is Chat Now. Now, what's that all about?
Chat now, in exactly 2 hours, somebody on my staff will be assigned to cover ChatNow. And, you know, the five regional offices of the Foundation Center, we're all assigned times. So that you go online and you type in your question, and we answer you in live time.
Okay.
And if you come at one of the times when we're not there, you can leave a question, and someone will get back to you via email the next day or so. But, yeah, here in D.C., Tuesdays to Fridays, 2 to 4:30, one of my librarians is chatting away, and we'll answer all kinds of questions. I tell people the only question we probably don't ask is we don't give you a list of funders, but we tell you where to look.
Right.
But it's
where
a great...
Well, because it's so specific. I mean, yes, it would be nice to think that there is one list of people who are looking to give you money. But there's a lot more that goes into understanding the mind of a funder and what they're looking for. So we're going to take a quick little break here, and when you come back, maybe you can help my listeners today get inside the minds of a funder.
Oh, okay.
And we'll be right back.
Okay.
When you have a great idea and need to work with others to bring it to life, how do you do it? Sometimes it's tough because the people you work with are in different places, with different schedules, using different devices. Google Apps lets you bring ideas to life with others. Here's how. Start with email that offers more. Gmail does more than send and receive emails. It connects people and lets you chat instantly while viewing a snapshot of your team's relevant activities and access to everything they shared with you. With Google Docs, there's only one version for everyone to work on. Share easily with the right people without email attachments or compatibility hassles. And work together on the same docs at the same time in a way that simply makes sense. Edit and interact easily with integrated social commenting. Google Calendar makes it easy to share schedules and find times to meet, and schedule or update meetings with a few clicks. Everyone can't be in the same place at the same time, but Google Apps lets you work together from any place. With multi-way video chat, you'll feel like you're all in the same room. While screen sharing and integration with Google Docs lets you work with more people from anywhere, on any device, even on your mobile phone or tablet. Work with any team at any time, from any place, on any device. Google Apps. Work in the future, today. To learn more, go to google.com/apps.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
And we are back here live on the Nonprofit Coach with Pat Pasquale, director of the Washington, D.C. office of the Foundation Center, giving us terrific resources today. Pat, you've already spoken about glasspockets.org, grantspace.org, really fantastic resources here. But help us get inside the mind of foundation funders. What are they looking for? What do you see as the biggest mistakes that my listeners should be avoiding?
Well, I think the biggest mistake is the same mistake that fundraisers have been making for decades, is not doing enough research on a funder to see what they have given to, where they seem to be going, and about now more and more you also look at the individuals attached to the funders. We found, we have a class that we have here called How to Approach a Foundation.
Okay.
And I found...
A live class that people can take, or can they also take that online?
It's a live class, and it's also a webinar. It's also a recorded class. We have that whole series of recorded webinars, and How to Approach is one. But what I found in doing research, because I teach this, I always like to keep it fresh, is to look up and see how, you know, and we hear this everywhere, you know, engage your funders, but how do you engage them when you don't see them? Because more and more people are resorting to conference calls and teleconferences, so pressing the flesh becomes a little bit harder than it used to be in the past. But the Center for Effective Philanthropy was interesting. They did a study last year, and they found that foundations are relying on social media now. They are relying on social media to get the word out more than they did in the past. So they're a little bit slow to get started, but they've now picked up the ball. But what the study said was interesting, that nonprofits weren't biting. They said they prefer the one-on-one, and they weren't always looking at what was available on a foundation's website, Twitter feed, blog post, etc. So I think one of the lessons from the study, Center for Effective Philanthropy, is that in order to get inside of a funder, you really do need to look at what they're putting out there, because they're doing it intentionally, and you look like you're not doing a good job if you haven't read their latest announcement that they're not funding in a certain area, or they've started an initiative, etc. So that's
it. To them, feels like you're just not paying attention.
Correct. Yeah, and that's not a new phenomenon. That's funders. We as fundraisers have always had to do homework. We didn't have as many. The thing is, we have too many resources now. It's like, where do you look? You Google them. You go onto our site. You go into the Association of Grantmakers sites that are out there, et cetera. But I have a suggestion in that area. We talk about in your board and fundraising classes, that having board members sort of watch social media sites is a really good use of their time. It's not as intimidating as going on fundraising calls, but they can actually, you can assign them to watch a blog, a Twitter feed, et cetera, and keep your organization up to date on what's up, what's out there.
It's a way to make them feel that they're actually contributing, but it's not terribly high impact, or it's not going to take
right.
a lot of their time.
And they can do it at their leisure, which is a nice thing. So you know, following their social media is really good. And another tactic that we also mention in our classes is that find out what they're funding in terms of research or strategy. Another of our new websites is issuelab.org. And this is a fascinating site to go to, because it brings together publications that foundations have either funded or they have put out. And that tells you a lot about, you know, what they're interested in, what are best practices, what's been tried, not tried, etc. We talk about in one class, like Kids Count, which is a great resource put out every year by the Annie Casey Foundation.
Annie Casey, yeah, that's a great.
And if you're doing anything on children, you should be quoting from Annie Casey, because everybody knows that Annie Casey is like the expert in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so Issue Lab.
So again, it's making sure that you're paying attention, because the expectation is, yes, you may have great ideas on what to do for children, but if you aren't doing your homework and you don't understand the resources that most people in the industry are utilizing, then it makes it look like you're not in the know.
Correct. Right. And it's fascinating. I was just looking at Issue Lab. Issue Lab gives you an idea of trends, because you can see what the newest publications are, like Black Male Achievement is hot. There's a whole host of things on international events and countries in conflict, et cetera. It often reflects the state of the world, and funders are, you know, what they're interested in, and sort of gives you tips as to, you know, where you should be, you know, floating your boats.
And that's issuelabs.org?
That's issuelab.org. It's real easy.
Okay, perfect.
Actually, at GrantSpace, you can get through it too, but it's easy
to
get
right
to
it as well. So I'm just wondering, what's the, for busy fundraisers who want to raise lots of money but need to slow down a little bit and learn the rules of the road, what's the pathway that you would suggest? We have all these websites. How do you prioritize, or how do you think through that?
Well, I think for people who are starting fundraising, I actually had to teach a class on this last night for the Young Nonprofit Professional Association, is just knowing sort of the, doing a little background on how fundraising happens and foundation fundraising in particular, knowing the vocabulary, a little bit of the history, so that you can cut through some of the massive amounts of data a little bit quicker. For example, we were talking about last night about what's a private foundation, what's a corporate giving program. If you don't understand those basics, if you don't take time to learn those, you spend a lot of time looking for data that may not be there because it just doesn't exist. But if you take some time to do some background work, then you're better off in starting your research. The other thing that I always tell people is when you start fundraising is to set up some kind of a system, record-keeping system, so you know what you're doing and what you've done, et cetera, so you don't keep constantly going back back and forth to the same resources, the same people, and that you know what the, you know, the way ahead actually is. And I think if you some upfront work, it's like with painting, more preparation before you start painting.
Right.
More preparation before you send in your proposals or your project funder. You get better results in the end.
And I think that's, I think sometimes that is the challenge, isn't it, is taking a look, a fresh look at where you've been, even if you have relationships with funders, to take a fresh look at how they've changed over time.
Oh, and we're in a major generational change. I don't know in other parts of the country, but here in D.C. we're seeing baby boomers, and finally the economy is a little bit better, and we're seeing changes in heads of foundations here in town and major changes in some of the big nonprofits. And it's really interesting because then you have to say, okay, Margaret is gone from Consumer Health Foundation. I've known her for 20 years. Now I have to learn, I have to reach out to the new person, and we have to sort
who
of
may
be
have
taking,
different priorities or
right.
may look at the entire landscape in a different way.
Correct.
Which is,
so,
is not necessarily good or bad, but is important for the nonprofit to understand that that's the reality of the situation.
Right, and you were talking about the generational changes, and you know, baby boomers and millennials and X people have different ways of looking at the world. And as you said, they come into a new set of people, come into a foundation from one of the other groups and says, we don't want to do it this way. We're going to an online form, or we're only doing, you know, general operating support, or we're only doing, you know, targeted, we're going to issue RFPs. So, it's right now is a very turbulent time, I think, in terms of foundation fundraising, and it's going to go on like this in another 5 to 10 years.
So this is part of what we wanted to do for our listeners today is that crystal ball, what is new, what is changing, and as we heard in page one, terrific study done and reported in the Chronicle of Philanthropy about this sort of the older generation moving on a little bit and baby boomers now moving into those most senior leadership positions, and certainly as a population now becoming the largest funding group. So that being the case, that means that this is really a different time for fundraising, and therefore for all of our listeners, whether you've had longstanding relationships or not, things are changing.
Oh, absolutely. I found a great study. Next year is the 50th anniversary of the Foundation Center here in Washington. So we're trying to do some programs on future casting, just like what you're saying. I found a really great study looking out for the future, an orientation for 21st century philanthropists. It was put out by the Monitor Institute. And it starts off with a great chart, and it says old patterns of habits and seeds of change. And it goes through a whole host of characteristics and behaviors. For example, it says older patterns or habits, giving primarily late in life, change, giving throughout life. And I think that's really very right on target, because I see all these groups in D.C., young groups, young nonprofits, Capital Cause, another group I went to, Give Alexandria, Women Circles, and these are younger folks who don't have a lot of money, you know, individually, but they're giving collectively through a giving circle, and they're starting earlier. They're not waiting until, you know, after the kids are gone, and now we can make a big gift to a university. So, but there, yeah, there's a lot of changes out there coming.
Looking at, are you feeling that giving circles and programs of that sort, which have been around for a while, are with this new leadership coming into foundations, is going to be more significant to the fundraising development professional, or just another tool that they should be aware of?
Well, I think it's like everything these days. It's probably going to be another tool, and you have to learn how to do all of them. So you still have to learn how to write a letter to your older donors. You have to be able to tweet and blog to your younger donors, and heavens knows what's coming down the pike in terms of the next wave of communicating.
And as you were pointing out, the tweeting and blogging and all that, while sort of traditionally seen as maybe, you know, more millennial or even Generation X, that leadership of foundations are increasingly relying on these tools as a way to signal where they're at and what they're looking for.
Right.
And that can become very significant for everyone listening today in terms of what is changing in the marketplace and where are they going to find this information.
Right, and we had a really wonderful program, a foundation here in town. The Meyer Foundation, one of their program officers came, and they spoke about how a nonprofit uses social media is one of the things they now look at in terms of assessing the overall sort of management of an organization. And they were sort of hinting, if you didn't have a social media program, it was like, what's wrong with you? It should be part of your communications. It should be part of your communications program. You should have something. You don't have to have everything, but if you don't have one, it causes people to sort of scratch their head and say, how come?
Now, do nonprofits, because I think you're raising a very important point, one that I've spoken quite a bit about, and I'm just wondering if you're seeing the trend go in the right direction, and that is to look internally before you look to funders, because while you need the money, and that's great, that's wonderful that you need the money, get in line. So does everybody else. The real issue is, are you ready to raise money?
Oh, well, we have a class for that. We have a class for almost everything. It's getting ready. It's called Before You Seek a Grant. And in fundraising planning, one of the first things we talk about is your case statement and your organizational assessment. And funders expect you to, in order to present any case in fundraising to individuals or corporations or foundations, you really have to know the SWOT, your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and be able to present them to funders of all to donors of all levels, because you have to, win them over. And
right.
If you go out before you're ready, then you can, not get the best results.
And increasingly, it is, I'm not even sure it's increasingly, I think it's probably always been the case, but you have to sort of be part of the team. In other words, if you are looking to a foundation and they are heavily invested in utilizing social media and you have no presence, you may just be outside their comfort zone.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And that you can take that in a number of different ways. If they communicate in a certain way, if they fund certain types of organizations, these are all really important clues to how you position yourself with that organization if you have any chance of being successful.
Correct. And I think you're right on the button. If they've got an online form and they've got a website and they're tweeting and blogging, et cetera, and you are having trouble and you don't have, the basics, I think it says something to them. Not necessarily bad, but it's like, okay, what's your new long-term sustainability? Are you moving ahead with the way the world is going?
So resources-wise, so we will be posting all of your sites today in the radio links. Say I just became a development officer for an organization. It's been around for a while. They've maybe have a bit of a track record with foundations, but one of the things that I'm looking to do is to give a fresh look, a fresh start to our foundation fundraising. Where's the best place to start?
Well, it depends on, I guess, is it the same? Foundation fundraising is pretty much still the same process of fresh, it's relationships. And
right.
That's what you have to sort of work out is relationships. And as I said, I think it's harder these days because there aren't as many receptions where you actually get to meet people. And that's where I think social media can really play a role in terms of, you know, seeing what they're doing and how you can help. One of the things that I think funders like is they like to be provided with content. And many nonprofits know more about an issue than a foundation. And being able to send them the newest report on child abuse or environment, mm-hmm. et cetera. And being the expert, you know, presenting yourself as the expert is a great way to sort of have what they say is ask for advice, get money, ask for money, get nothing.
Right, right. But that's a very important point. If you're not a thought leader, and it doesn't mean that you have to be the largest and most well-funded organization, but if you're not a thought leader, if you're not bringing something new to the table apart from just direct service, but from that direct service, you're actually measuring things. You actually are looking at outcomes. In other words, you're a thought leader in some aspect, whether it's in your particular community or in your particular sector. If you're not thinking of yourself in that way, I think it, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it takes you outside of the expected realm of foundation fundraising. Not to say that you might not be able to inspire some individuals to maybe support your organization, but when you look to foundations, they are looking to add something to the overall sector while they're funding you.
Well, the big foundations, and I always like to make that distinction. You have big Gates, you know, Ford, even like here in town, Meyer, Cambridge, they're strategic, but as you well know, there are hundreds and thousands of little itty-bitty foundations who are perfectly happy to fund the food bank and make sure, you know, what they're interested in is direct service.
Mm-hmm.
So part of your research is figuring out who's who, and each of the approaches will be a little bit different depending on direct service providers as opposed to those who issue RFPs and want measurable outcomes and reports, et cetera.
But even there, they still want you to be measuring, counting, reporting. And in that regard, it may not be the same as writing some big white paper or e-book on a topic. But at the same time, they're funding something, and it's not just keeping your doors open. It's
right.
That there are outcomes, there are things that they're looking to accomplish. The bar is higher, I think, when you are seeking to attract foundation support than necessarily, and again, these are generalities, that there's always exceptions. But with individuals, it may be more of an emotional connection. It may be more of a keep the doors open connection. But foundation support, they're looking to accomplish something.
Right. Most of them.
And so you have to prepare yourself.
The really little ones.
Right. Well, but you have to prepare yourself to be counting, to be
right.
Offering something of value.
Well, but the other way of looking at that, Ted, is that evaluation and counting shouldn't just be for the funder. It should be for you, the manager, because you want to manage your program the best you can, making the most of your resources. So it's really a management tool that good managers use, and not just a tool that you have to, a report that you have to do because of a funder asked for it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What your point is that you really need to be thinking of that as just part of your overall management. So that goes back to your point earlier of doing the internal assessment, is that are you ready to attract this kind of support?
Right. Mm-hmm. And different types of, even within the funding world, we have a class on corporate giving, and we talk about, you know, working with corporations is a whole different kettle of fish sometimes than working with foundations.
Mm-hmm.
And are you ready for the things they're going to ask you for?
We've got about 10 minutes in your crystal ball. Do you want to talk a little bit about corporate foundations, and do they differ in what they're looking for and the approach that you should be focused on from public foundations?
Well, I think corporate giving, when you look down the road, is pretty much the same. If you understood it 10 years ago, you probably, well, I don't know. It's, you hear everywhere that it has to be aligned to the business objectives, which has almost always been the case for people who are doing serious corporate solicitation, that you have to know what their business interests are and how you can help them sell a product, sell a service, become a good citizen, be seen as a good citizen, et cetera. But it does take more what we call hand-holding in terms of talking with them and then meeting their requirements. They like metrics. They want to know how many times. They are very into what's your social media presence and how many hits do you get on your page and how many is your press release ticked up, et cetera. And so you have to be ready to deal with, they want to see in concrete ways what the word, how the word is getting out that they're doing good to your organization is getting out there.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the ethical issues about who you want to work with. You may not want to work with an alcohol company or an oil company because you're a certain type of company. And then the trend seems to be that corporations are giving more in-kind support and also loaned executive kinds of things. Good 360.
So looking beyond just the check, of course, everybody loves to have cash.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But can that building that kind of relationship can sometimes be a pathway to other funding?
Right. And starting off with volunteers at your event, you know, loaned executives using their space. Good 360, which is a great organization. You get things from corporations as opposed to money. Maybe.
Right.
For some organizations, a better pathway than trying to write a proposal, et cetera. And then the corporations have so many other ways of giving their sponsorships, it's close-related marketing. It's for some organizations, it's you know, probably more lucrative than going after foundations because you're looking for certain, you know, basic things that you might be able to get as a gift, an in-kind gift, as opposed to getting money for it.
So we have all these resources that are available. The Foundation Center continues to be an excellent resource for training and research regarding foundation support and corporate foundation support. So for all of our listeners today, they can go to tedhart.com radio links. They'll be able to get all of the links that we've discussed here today. And I think from what you're saying is there is a change coming that is already underway in the foundation sector, and that maybe one of the common themes is that this is the time of a generational change. And what that means is that can both open up opportunities, but it can also be a game changer for some organizations that may have relied on knowing the same people for many years and relying on funding of a certain sort. That's now changing.
Right. I think that's if you're just you have it's like looking ahead. It has to happen because of the years and lifestyle, you know, life cycles. That's given when foundations were started. Looking at their terms when they were actually started, when you know they've had the last generational change happened, etc. You can kind of predict and look at the age of folk. That things are coming, but you have this big gulp, the baby boomers, that we tend to change things as we go along because there's so many of us. So.
Right, right. Now, one of the wonderful things I think that's worth mentioning today is that in the nonprofit sector, the one thing that is completely unique about foundations is that they're the only ones who are required to give money away.
Correct.
So they have to give away at least 5%. Each year. They can use some of that administratively, but they have to give money away. So they are, in some ways, and some people have suggested that foundations should view themselves more as sort of the venture capitalists of the nonprofit sector. Do you subscribe to that?
Well, there's some people who say that. I have a mixed bag. I'm a mixed bag person. As long if they're going to be the venture capitalist, then somebody's going to have to help with general operating support for the really social, what I call the human services needs, because they have no, they have very little opportunity for earned income. Big places like theaters, universities, they have a revenue source. But if you're feeding the homeless and the hungry, there's not much you can raise.
Right. I mean, when you are literally the safety net.
Right. So the safety net people are.
Yeah. Are most vulnerable,
right?
To whims of funding. So, are foundations a realistic long term strategy for organizations of that sort?
Well, when we talk to people, we talk about they help special projects and get things off the ground, but foundations are not usually a good long term resource for any organization. It's part of you have to diversify your funding base and have foundations and corporations and earned income and even government grants, which we say they're still out there.
Right.
If you're ready to go through the hoops, there's a lot of government grants out there. And there's all kinds of new things are sort of emerging. I think that's the amazing thing is you have to sort of keep your eye out there thinking what else is there and what else can we do, because it may just be evolving that, giving circles will be the hot thing for the next 10, 20 years and then something else will come around.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a hot discussion on our internal intranet about social impact bonds. Are they really going to last, or they just aren't? Is somebody going to try? But I think more and more ways of fundraising are being tried, and some will float and some will sink.
So creativity and understanding the marketplace, staying in touch with the Foundation Center, particularly as you were saying, the Issue Lab. Is one area where you're going to be able to pick up those trends. So you don't have to be the expert. You don't even have to hire experts. If you're a single person, maybe you're the executive director who's also the fundraiser, and you're feeling frustrated that there are just so many things that you have to know, you've got to organize the information, because while it may seem unfair, everyone is pretty much playing by the same rules. And unfortunately, I think right now what's frustrating in the foundation sector for a lot of folks is that those rules are changing.
Right.
And it may be tied to generation, but there's some new thinking, some rethinking that can open opportunities for some organizations but close doors to others.
Right. And you're very active in global fundraising, and the new book out on AFP just put out on international fundraising. It talks about how, America isn't philanthropy is being reinvented in different countries, and all kinds of other interesting formats are sort of popping up outside of the United States. And, more and more millionaires and billionaires are in China or Mexico. And
right.
So not only is funding changing in terms of format, it's also changing in forms of where it's coming from.
Right. And at the same time that we're seeing pockets of wealth and philanthropy sprout up and grow around the world, we're also seeing unprecedented growth in Americans funding outside of America.
Right.
Certainly here at CAFAmerica.org, we're an organization that helps foundations, individuals, and corporations with their international grant making, and we've never seen the levels of activity that we're seeing right now. And certainly the conversations that we're having gives us reason to believe that trend will continue.
Right. I agree.
So, Pat, we're just wrapping up our time here. Again, just a fantastic show, always with you, rich in information. Please make sure that we end the show here by telling my listeners how they can find you.
Oh, well, to get to the Foundation Center in Washington, D.C., website is www.foundationcenter.org/Washington. And you'll see our schedule, our blog, our Twitter feed, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're in Washington, come visit us at 1627 K Street on the third floor.
Well, I certainly look forward to getting over there to see you sometime soon. But we will post all of your links today. And, Pat, again, thank you for being our guest here once again, a terrific show on The Nonprofit Coach. We will be back next week here on The Nonprofit Coach with a great show next Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern. See you then. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. Thank you, Ted. Bye.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.